All right, welcome. This session is called Building HTTP Services for Modern Client Applications. My name is Philip, and it's absolutely wonderful to be here with you today. And I hope everyone's enjoying the Tech Day so far. And in this session, we'll have a look at the modern Microsoft stack and what it has to offer in terms of building robust HTTP APIs. So before we begin, just a couple words about myself so that you know who's out there speaking to you. I wear many hats, but primarily I'm a .NET developer. I'm also a blogger, open source contributor. I'm also a Microsoft ASP.NET MVP. And in general, I try to be quite active in the ASP.NET community. So that's why I happen to be talking today about HTTP services. You can find me on Twitter at philip_woj. You can find me on my blog as well, that's strathweb.com. I blog mainly about ASP.NET related stuff, mainly about ASP.NET Web API framework, which surprisingly is going to be something we will focus on quite heavily today. As far as my professional engagement goes, I work for a company called Arc Media, which is a digital agency based in Lucerne, and you can check them out at arcmedia.ch. So, HTTP. I mean, it sounds boring, doesn't it? I mean, it's just a protocol and pretty old, for the matter of fact. So nothing new and shiny like the stuff we've seen in other presentations. But just look at the devices behind me. And what they all have in common is that you can reach all of them with HTTP. So at this day of age, really every single new device that is being produced has internet connectivity and can have a backend that is driven by HTTP. And you know, if you look at this from the business standpoint, this is tremendous business opportunity, and there's tremendous business potential there. Because if you imagine a platform or a framework that allows you to build robust, flexible, maintainable APIs, you are able to reach all of those devices with your single HTTP backend. So again, tremendous business potential there. And you know how when you install Java, you get this little pop-up that says 3 billion devices run Java? Well, here's news for you, Java. 11 billion devices can be reached over HTTP. And these are the numbers from Cisco, by the way. And they are predicting that by 2020, we will have over 50 billion HTTP-enabled devices. So, as developers, as .NET developers, maybe ASP.NET developers, it's not really an option for you to start thinking in terms of HTTP APIs and building and consuming them. It's an absolute must. So again, in this presentation, we'll have a look at what modern Microsoft stack has to offer in that matter. But before we do, what do we need from an API, from an HTTP API? And I would tell you that the most important thing that you need from your API, because otherwise you'll have problems, is that you do not tightly couple the client and the server. So if you build an API, you don't want to make decisions for the client. You would like to enable the client to make some decisions on its own. You want maintainability, so you want your API to be able to be consumed in the long run, and you would like to work with it for a long time. You want your API to be discoverable, so you want to conform to HTTP standards so that you don't reinvent the wheel. Again, this comes down to tight coupling between the client and the server. If you follow HTTP standards, you avoid the coupling because the client really already knows how to consume this API because he's aware of the HTTP standards as well. Furthermore, you probably want scalability in your API because you would like to facilitate as many clients as possible. So you want to handle all those traffic peaks. And to achieve that, you would like probably your framework that you use for building API to be asynchronous. And of course, you want flexibility. You don't want to compromise on your business goals. So you'd like, you know, large parts of the API to be replaceable easily and so on. So my timer here shows that I've been talking for 5 minutes already, and we arrived at the agenda. So we'll have a look at Web API as the go-to framework on top of the modern Microsoft stack for building HTTP services, and we'll see how it's different from any other solutions and any other tools that allow you to build HTTP services. We'll go through a process of building such an API. Then we'll have a look at different media types and how you can facilitate a wide range of clients by just providing different media types from your API. And finally, we'll explore some of the rich querying capabilities that your API could expose, again, giving the client tremendous freedom in terms of querying and accessing your API. So Web API, it's probably my favorite framework. It's a relatively new Microsoft framework. It was released last year. This is a quick overview for those of you who have not worked with Web API before. It was released in August last year, but Web API 2 was actually only released last month. So it's fresh out of the oven, October this year. And it's the only framework from Microsoft that really treats HTTP as a first-class citizen. So, you know, over the years, we have had many different solutions and many different tools that allowed you to build HTTP services. You could do it with the WCF family. You could do it with ASP.NET MVC and some other solutions as well. The problem with those frameworks and those tools was that most of them, they treated HTTP as merely a transport protocol. But HTTP is much more than that. With Web API, it becomes a fully-fledged application protocol, and you get to use all the rich HTTP semantics, the headers, the status codes, and all the built-in things that are already part of the HTTP specification. You get to use them to kind of fuel your API and your application. And finally, Web API is open source, which is very important because there is a large community already around Web API. And there are a lot of pairs of eyes looking at Web API and the direction in which it's going. So especially if you compare it to something like WCF, which is closed source, this is extremely important. And in Web API 2, actually, two of the major features of Web API 2 were actually contributed by the community. Cores cross-origin resource sharing and attribute routing were contributed by the community. With Web API, you get to work with this new HTTP object model. And again, if you are used to building APIs, for example, with MVC framework, you are used to working with system.web library, which is probably one of the most dreadful libraries in the .NET ecosystem. With Web API, you get to work with this new HTTP object model, where, for example, headers and HTTP content are all strongly typed. Now, with Web API, you also lose this concept of angle brackets coding. And if you are used to working with WCF, you know exactly what I mean. You would create lots of XML configuration, and then at runtime, things would start breaking down. So in Web API, all the configuration is code-based. There is a beautiful symmetry between the client and the server, and hopefully we get enough time to show this as an example. And all the APIs are asynchronous as well. So for example, just to be able to read the content of an HTTP message, you have to do it asynchronously. So that forces you into thinking in terms of tasks rather than in terms of operations that complete synchronously. Now, the problem with ASP.NET Web API is that its name is wrong. And it's called ASP.NET, but it doesn't require ASP.NET runtime. In fact, it doesn't even require IIS. So the name is a bit misleading in that sense. It's also called Web API, which I guess is fine. But if you think deeper about it, it's a fully-fledged HTTP framework. And you can do much more than just Web APIs. You can do pretty much whatever you'd like to do over HTTP. You can do it with Web API. And for that, I have an example that I want to show you later on. Now, how can it work without ASP.NET? Well, Web API comes in four flavors of hosting: web hosting, self-hosting, memory hosting, and OWIN. And web hosting is the most traditional one. So you can add Web API, which in itself is a NuGet package, is distributed over NuGet. You can add it to any .NET application that sits on top of the ASP.NET runtime. So you might have a Web Forms application or MVC application. You can add Web API there. And you know, maybe your website is at root, and root slash API is your API. However, in many cases, this is an overkill, and you would like to avoid it. And a very viable and very interesting alternative is self-hosting. And with self-hosting, you can turn any .NET application into a Web API server. So you can add web API packages, packages from NuGet, assemblies. You can add to any .NET application. So it could be a console application or a Windows service. And this application then, this uses WCF hardened core. It internally, it uses HTTP listener, and it attaches itself to a specific port and starts listening for requests at this port. Now, this is extremely extremely viable alternative and quite attractive as well, because the deployment model becomes very easy. It's much easier to deploy a console application than it is to deploy a web application to IIS and deal with all the permissions drama and application pools and all that. And of course, with self-hosting, it's very lightweight and very low ceremony. So that's very important to remember as well. Then the whole pipeline can run in memory as well. And while this is not really suitable for production use, for test suits, it's extremely useful. What you can do, you can take an instance of a .NET HTTP client, and you can take your web API server, and you can connect them together in memory in the same process. This is possible because .NET HTTP client can take the web API server in its constructor. And with that, they can communicate together without touching any network stack. Now, why is this important? Because it allows you to run very robust end-to-end test scenarios entirely in memory. And finally, with Web API 2, we get support for OWIN. And OWIN is a massive topic, so we would need a separate session for that. But in short, the Open Web Interface for .NET is a specification that defines or tries to define the way of decoupling the web application from the host. If you think about ASP.NET and IIS, they are tightly coupled together. ASP.NET has to run on IIS. Well, with OWIN, the web framework, like in our case, Web API, delegates the hosting responsibilities to the OWIN layer. So you can host Web API using one of the existing OWIN implementations, like, for example, Microsoft's Project Katana. So let's go through a process of building an API, and let's see how we could apply different HTTP standards and look out for important things that your API should be aware of. So if you are used to working with MVC, this sounds familiar. However, there are some major differences between the two frameworks. What do you do to create an API with Web API? You start with a controller. You inherit from a base class API controller. You can obviously have many controllers for different resources. Then you add some actions because the controller has to do something, and the client is expecting to invoke some operation on the resource. So the action itself can return your own model, and then the Web API framework is going to take care of the serialization and the creation of the HTTP response for you. Or you can decide that I would actually want to work directly with HTTP concepts. And in that case, you return HTTP response message, and then you are responsible for making sure that you meet HTTP standards yourself. And in Web API 2, there is a new concept called IHTTP action result, and we will discuss it in a second. Then you have to add some routes, because the URI of the request has to be somehow mapped to a specific controller. And normally, in a lot of tutorials, especially MVC, but also the old Web API tutorials, you would see that you actually start with routing. I specifically put routing here at the third spot, because I'm going to try to convince you to use attribute routing, which is new in Web API 2. If you use attribute-based routing, you first have to have a controller, and you have to have actions. And finally, if you have some cross-cutting concerns, like logging, like authentication, you would apply them using some of the features of Web API, like message handlers or the filters. Now, the major difference between the Web API pipeline and the MVC pipeline, if you are used to working with MVC, is that the entire pipeline in Web API is asynchronous. So controllers, filters, message handlers, everything executes asynchronously. And in MVC, everything is synchronous. So controllers, they do represent an HTTP resource for you. And of course, HTTP resource is just the way that you would like your HTTP API to look like. It doesn't have to be a one-to-one translation to your domain model. So you don't have to tightly couple those two together. In fact, you shouldn't. It's worth to inherit from API controller rather than try to implement the interface directly, because API controller provides lots of helpers. It provides also a number of contextual information, such as access to the request, access to the current principal if the client is authenticated, access to the certificate if you are using HTTPS, and so on and so forth. And controllers, they don't have to be part of your web application. They can be loaded from an external assembly, and they can be reused across different projects. So Web API provides hooks for that that allow you to plug in external controllers as well. And I think now it's a good moment to jump over to Visual Studio. And let's have a look at the very simple Web API. So what I have here, and I don't have it because you don't see it, so I'm going to exit the presentation mode. And now I have it. So what I have here is just a very simple console application. That's it. The only thing that I have in this application is I have a model that's my team object. It has an ID name and the league, which are simple properties. And this is a static list which is going to emulate a database for us. Now, to get started with Web API, you should install Web API self-host package from NuGet, but because it's a presentation and things break down, I was expecting the network connection to break down, so I already downloaded this package, Microsoft ASP.NET Web API self-host. As you can see, it downloads a number of dependencies, but they are not really important at this moment. So to get started with Web API, we need two things. We need a configuration object. Oops. Now I'm at German keyboard, now I'm at American keyboard. HTTP self-host server. And you have to say at which port you are going to listen. In our case, it's going to be 999. Then we need a server. Oops, I did it in the opposite order. New HTTP self-host configuration, of course. OK. So you specify the server here, and you pass in the configuration. So this is the bare minimum for us to get started with Web API, configuration and the server. Now what we are going to do is we are going to open the server and tell it that you should be listening for requests. And that moment we can say server running at port 999. We will block the execution here because we don't want the console application to exit. And on exit, we will dispose of all the resources that we have. So this is the bare minimum that we need to get up and running, configuration and the server. Now if I start this, you'll see that it will start a console application. It says server is running. And I can jump over to my browser. And you can see that it is alive. It says that no HTTP resource was found, but it works. So if I stop it, it wouldn't find anything anymore. Now, what we need now is a controller. So let's add a controller, Teams controller. And I'm going to move it to a separate file. Now, this controller needs some actions, and we haven't really talked about it. So let's go back to the presentation, and let's continue with building this API as we progress. So actions are effectively the things that the client is going to invoke, right? So one way to do it is like this. But the problem with it, well, there are a number of problems with this, effectively. So this is the so-called RPC, remote procedure calling, and this is unfortunately how a lot of developers build their APIs, and what I always say that this is a great cancer of API designs. Because this effectively creates a very tight coupling between the client and the server, because the client is effectively calling a server-side method. So now if the method ever changes, then the client breaks down. On top of that, there is no way for the client to infer one operation from another. So in this case, if I know how to add a team, I have no idea how to add a player. I have to have full documentation from the server side that describes all of the methods that can be called and how they should be called as well. So this makes it very difficult for the clients to implement your API, and it makes it a nightmare for both sides to maintain their solutions in the long run. So a very viable alternative, and in fact the only alternative, is to use RESTful routing. And this is the same API, but you can see that it's much better designed right now. First and foremost, you are dealing with resources here, and the client has no knowledge of any server-side methods. It only knows of resources. And we are using the four major HTTP verbs to allow the client to express specific intent. So if the client wants to create a resource, he's going to issue a POST request. If the client wants to update the resource, he's going to issue a PUT request. In that sense, we are now standardized, and we are now conforming to HTTP standards, and it's much easier for the clients to consume this API. And in fact, earlier today, I was talking to my friend Jose, who I hope is somewhere here. He's going to be speaking later today about .NET 4.5. And we were talking about API design, and he said that the most important thing is to apply the KISS principle. And we all know the KISS principle, keep it simple, stupid. But what he meant was keep it simple and standard. And that's exactly how you should design your API. So this is something that we just talked about. In Web API, we would like to achieve this RESTful routing. And in fact, we don't have to do anything to have it, because Web API forces us into this mode by default. So as opposed to other frameworks, or like MVC framework, for example, the dispatching of actions happens not based on the action name, but based on the HTTP verb. So as we add actions to our controller, the name doesn't really matter. What matters is that to which HTTP verb this action is going to map. And to provide this mapping, you can use prefixing, or you can use action attributes. So by default, prefixing is enough, so get all and get by ID would automatically respond only to get requests. And if you are a fan of RPC, you can still do it, and it's still supported with just a small change in configuration, but it's definitely not encouraged. Now, the client wants to send some data as well. So the client is going to try to send some information to the server. And there are some basic rules to follow. Again, some things are much different than they are in the MVC framework. By default, all the primitives are taken from the URI. So if you are going to send an ID, for example, its Web API will try to read it from the route or from the query string. If it's a complex type, then by default, it's going to be read from the body, and it's read from the body using the concept of media type formatters, which we are going to discuss a little bit later on. But the major difference between MVC and Web API is that you can only bind one thing from the body. So you can send one team, but you cannot send two teams. This is because of performance optimizations. Web API doesn't try to bind against the whole body by buffering the body, which is exactly what MVC is doing. So it's just using a forward-only stream. So if you want to send two teams, like in this example, you'd have to wrap them into one single type, something like a team request that has two properties of a team. And of course, all of this is customizable. If you want to read primitives from the body, it's possible, but it's totally up to you, right? As far as returning from your actions, and we will be adding those actions in a second. As far as returning from those actions, you can do one of the three things. You can return just a model. So we are dealing with a team object. You can just return a team object from your API, and then Web API will serialize it into the appropriate format that is expected by the client. You can use void as well. And if you return void, then Web API will send a response message with the status code 204, which happens to be the HTTP status code indicating no content. Then if you don't want to have the framework handle all of this for you, then you can choose to work with HTTP response message directly. And then you are kind of responsible for everything. And in many cases, this is quite useful. In some cases, it's not. So it's totally up to you. And in Web API 2, we have this new concept of HTTP action result. And this is a simple interface. It has execute async, and it has a simple signature with a return of a HTTP response message, but or rather the task of HTTP response message, because everything is async. You can use it to, you can use it as a factory for HTTP response messages, and in many cases this helps you clean up the code in your actions. So let's jump back to Visual Studio, and let's add the actions. And in fact, this is a very tedious process, so I'm going to copy-paste something that I have here on the side. And we are going to go through it right now together. So this is the Teams controller. It's a very basic Teams controller that applies the RESTful routing principles here. So if you invoke a GET request on the controller, you are going to get a list of all the teams from our quote-unquote database. If you invoke a GET action, a GET HTTP verb, and you pass in an ID, we are going to try to find this item in our database and return it to you. Like I said, we return just the model, and Web API will take care of everything else. If we don't find it, we can throw an HTTP response exception, and what Web API would do is that it will catch the HTTP response exception and convert it into a response message for the client and apply the status code that we have chosen. In this case, it's a 404 because a resource like this doesn't exist. If the client wants to create a new resource, so add a new team to the database, he can post it to us, and we will validate the model state and add the team to our database. Again, if the request is invalid, then we will throw an exception. Then we have put and delete, which are pretty similar. They just look up in the database and either update or delete a resource. Now, one of the problems with this, I still cannot run it because we don't have any routes, but one of the problems with this is that we don't really work with HTTP concepts, and this talk was supposed to be about HTTP, aside from really throwing the exception here. So what we can do, what we actually should do, is we should look at the POST action, because it's a very good example of applying HTTP standards. What the HTTP specification says that if the client is creating a resource on the server, then the response from the server should be a status code 201, which is created. And the response should also contain a location header that contains a link at which this newly created resource can be retrieved from. Well, in our case, we are just returning void, so the response will be 204, which is not really according to the HTTP standard. Now, why is this important? You might say that it's not important at all. But if you think about trying to support as many clients as possible, adhering to HTTP standards is really important, and it's really easy for the client to create the resource and then grab a link from the location header in order to retrieve this resource in the future. So we are going to change this into an HTTP response message. ReSharper has imported the namespace for us. And what we are going to say, result is new HTTP response message, HTTP status code created. And on top of that, we are going to add the location header. And as I said before, all the headers in this new HTTP object model are strongly typed. So IntelliSense automatically knows that the location header should be a URI. So we are going to say, we really don't have any routing yet, but we can predict that the route would look something like this, teams plus the ID. And we can return this result. So now this looks a little bit better, but now you can say that it's a bit tedious to repeat all of this code. It's a bit tedious to create the message by hand and then add the header every time in every controller. And in fact, this is a very simple example, but we might be doing some much more advanced things, like adding caching headers or setting the HTTP content and then performing serialization and so on. And this is where the concept of IHTTP action result comes in. What we can do here, instead of doing this by hand, I can comment it out, I can change the return here to IHTTP action result. And what I can do here, I can use one of the helpers that exist on the base controller, the API controller, and I can say create it. And then I will copy this URI and pass in the model, and that's about it. So the helper that exists on the API controller, it knows that it has to issue a 201 response, and it knows that it has to set the appropriate header. And there are a lot of other helpers. In fact, if you are not the kind of person that likes to throw exceptions, I can say here, return bad request. And this will automatically be issued by Web API as a 400 status code, which is equivalent to a bad request. And again, it's indicative for the client that a bad request has been sent and I should do something with it, as opposed to, you know, the type of design that a lot of developers follow, that an invalid request results in a 200 OK response code, and then you have to look into the body of the response and look for some magical error property maybe to find out what is wrong. So this is then an example of HTTP action result, but this still doesn't work because we still have no routes. So let's go back to the presentation. And before we go into routing, these are some of the helpers that exist on the API controller base class. And we have looked at bad requests, we've looked at created, but there are a lot more. Even for silly things like not found, you have a helper here, if you want your API to be readable from the code perspective. Now, you can also implement IHTTP action result yourself. And here is a very good example of what you can do. This simple implementation of the interface takes in a view name and a model. And what it does, it uses a Razor Engine parser to parse the view and the model and create a fully fledged web page, the same kind of web page as you would create in MVC project. So we just set the status codes to OK. We set the content type to text HTML and we send it down to the client. Now, this shows a great flexibility of the Web API framework. As I said in the beginning, as a fully fledged HTTP framework, because serving HTML pages is no different than serving any sort of API data, because in terms of HTTP, this is just a different media type that we are serving. It doesn't matter if it's application JSON or text HTML. So with this, you can really support HTML pages as well from your Web API and forget about all other frameworks. Now, the final piece to the puzzle is routing. And with Web API 2, we get attribute routing, which is a fantastic library that simplifies routing enormously. And the way you define routing with attribute routing is that you apply routes directly to your controllers or to your actions or to both. In Web API 1, we only had this traditional ASP.NET routing, which is centralized. And it works OK, but unfortunately, it's extremely difficult to debug. It's very difficult to organize your resources into hierarchical structures and so on. And all this is extremely simple with attribute routing. So you know, attribute routing, it started as an open source library. And I was fortunate enough to be part of this project in a very small way. And now it's been brought to the core of Web API 2. The creator, Tim McCall, from the beautiful state of Montana, is one of the smartest people that you would ever meet. And let's jump back. Well, let's quit the presenter mode. And let's jump back to Visual Studio and apply the routes. And to do it, we will apply a route prefix on the whole controller. And this means that all of the actions in this controller are going to be prefixed by this bit here. So API slash Teams is going to lead us into the Teams controller. Now, each action will get its own route attribute. And in the case of get, it's an empty string, because API slash Teams should simply send us to this get request. Well, in this case, we have an ID, so we will say, we have a parameter of ID, and we will constrain it to be only integer, so that strings and other data types are not matched. To do a post, we will post against the main collection, the main route here, API/teams. And then I will copy this because it applies to the put, because it has an ID, and it applies to delete. One last thing that we need to do, we should jump over to this program class, and in the configuration, we should say that map HTTP attribute routes. Oops. I'm in German again. There we go. So this will tell Web API that at startup, it should reflect over all the controllers and create routes based on the attributes that we have created. Now we can finally start this and start using the API as it was intended to be used. So we will jump into this client. This is an extension for Chrome, which is called Postman, and it allows me to send HTTP requests and inspect them. So if I say I want to get all of the teams, as you can see, I get all of the teams, so that's not surprising. I can say I want team one, which is going to take me into this get by ID action here, because it has a parameter that matches the route. So we get team one. If I say send something stupid like this, it's going to respond with 404 because this route cannot be found because the ID is constrained to be integer only. So what we can do, we can post a new team. In this case, I have here a request. I'm posting a new team. And as you can see here in the response, we have a status code 201. Oops. And the location header is here. And it points us to a place at which we can retrieve this resource. So we are going to say, I want to get this resource now. And of course, it's there. We still have one problem here. We have a hard-coded URI here, which is probably not fine. So what we can do, we can comment this out, and we can give this route a name. The name of this route could be get by ID. Because what we want to do in this post action, we would like to tell the user that he can retrieve this resource using this particular route. So we could use an overload of the created method. Oh, it's not even an overload, it's a separate method, which is called created at route. And we can pass in the ID and the model. So now this is going to do exactly the same thing, except nothing is hard-coded now, well, except for the route name, but that's fine. And this is going to work in any environment, regardless of where we deploy the API. OK, so routing works. Let's go to the next point. And the next point are the message handlers. And at this point, I would show you some sort of a chart or a pipeline. But we don't need to do it because we have Russian dolls. And they are enough to illustrate how Web API operates. And you know how you work with, well, you work, you play probably with the Russian dolls. You have the big one, and then you open it, and there is a smaller one, and so on. Then you get to the last one, and you put them back together in the reverse order. Well, this is exactly what happens in Web API. The entry point to Web API is the so-called HTTP server. An HTTP server is just a special instance of a message handler. And after that, you can plug in your custom message handlers that can do different things. The things that are scoped globally, like we said, logging or authentication. And as the request flows into the system, it goes through this pipeline of the message handlers and finally it arrives at the controller and your action. Then the action executes and the response is created and it flows out of the system. And it flows out of the system in reverse order, which means that the message handler that handled the request first is going to handle the response last. And this is quite a clever design, as it allows you to do some really valuable things. So this is just a basic example of a handler. Again, the signature is very simple. It takes in a request, and it produces a task of response. And each handler, like we said, is going to process the request and response. So it has access to request, and it has access to response as well, if needed. And any message handler at any point can short-circuit a response. And what we mean by short-circuiting a response, we mean that a handler can arbitrarily decide that at this moment we break the processing pipeline and we are going to return some information to the user. That's why it's very valuable to do authentication, for example, with it, because it can immediately deny access further down into the system. So again, let's exit presentation mode. And let me add a simple handler. We will call it logging handler. There is just one method to override. We'll make it async. And we can grab, we have the request here and we grab the response on the way out. So what we can do, because this is a logging handler, we are going to log something. We are going to log a request URI, for example, and we, on the way out, we can log a response status code. So to plug in the message handler, we do it against the configuration object, config message handlers add new logging handler. You can see that ReSharper is actually finding all the handlers that are available in my context. And as you can see, the self-host server, so the web API server in itself, is also available here because it is a special subclass of the message handler as well. So I'm plugging in my message handler and I'm going to start this. Let's go. Let's make some requests. One, maybe something silly, and all of them. Now, if we look at the output, hopefully you can see this. We have a request, we have a response. Again, we have a request and the response status code and so on. So that's how we can do, for example, logging in web API. And just to show you that this can work just fine, what we can do, we can say, we can return a new HTTP response message, forbidden. Now, suppose you do some sort of authentication here and you would deny the client from accessing based on some condition. In this case, we are denying everybody. So in this case, we are getting forbidden and nobody can get into the API. All right. Media types. So what do we mean by media types? Well, the same entity can be represented in many various formats, right? So you can take the same piece of data and represent it as JSON or as XML or as binary format, or you can make an image out of that and that would still be a valid representation. So content negotiation is an HTTP concept that describes the client and the server as they engage into sort of discussion of what kind of representation to use to transfer a resource over the wire. So web API supports this, and you should support this in your API if you would like your API to be as flexible as possible, because you don't want to make a decision for your client that you have to consume JSON, because that's, you know, I'm a developer and I only want JSON. Your client, if the client is an ERP system from 1995, probably wants an XML, and it might be some Excel application and it wants a text CSV. Now, you're going to make your API much more flexible for all those clients by supporting content negotiation. And in web API, this comes down to this, that you create a single action, and then you plug in different media type formatters, and they are responsible for outputting a proper response for the client. So this serialization process is not tightly coupled at all to an action. So you are not losing anything by supporting multiple media types. In web API, content negotiation is supported through an order of precedence. The most important is media type mapping, so you can say that a specific extension, for example, in the URI is going to map to a specific format, like resource.json. But this is off by default, and by default, the most important thing is the accept header. The client can say, I accept application JSON, and then web API responds with JSON. The client can say, I accept text XML, then he's going to get XML. If the accept header is not present, web API will look for content type header. And content type header would be present if the client is sending some information to the server. Then web API is simply saying, OK, you are talking to me in XML, then I will respond in XML as well. If none of that is present, then simply the first media type formatter is being used. So out of the box, we have support for JSON and XML in Web API. However, the media type formatter's collection is very easily extendable. And what you can see here on the site is a screenshot from the Web API Contrib project, which is an absolutely wonderful open source project with all kinds of plugins and extensions and new functionalities that you can plug into your Web API system. And in the Web API Contrib library, we have a number of different formatters that are just plug and play. You can download them from NuGet and just start working with them. For example, for the wonderful library of protocol buffers, so very fast binary serialization format from Google, or BSON, binary JSON. It's all of that you can add just like that. So let's have a look at content negotiation. Again, And if I just start this, well, I cannot start it because I have this handler which is going to deny all of the requests. So, whoops, if I start this, you can see that I'm sending an accept header application JSON. Now I can say I really accept text XML. Well, sorry, typo, text XML. And I'm getting text XML. This works in both directions. So the client can also submit data as XML as long as it decorates the content type as text XML. So out of the box, these are the two formats supported. But what we can do, we can have a look at the very special case. Supposedly, my API only supports JSON. Now I'm going to remove all of the formatters, and I'm going to add the JSON formatter back. So now JSON formatter is the only one available in my API. So what happens? If I ask for application JSON, everything is fine. I'm getting the JSON response. But if I ask for text XML, I still get JSON. Now, why is that? Like we said, if the media type cannot be matched, then Web API will simply use the first available formatter. And in many cases, this is very wrong, because if you are a client and you are expecting a specific format, then you shouldn't get a different format instead. Now, this is again part of the HTTP standards. So Web API, even though it misbehaves a little bit out of the box, like we just saw, it allows you to correct this behavior by applying a custom content negotiator. What we can do here, we can say, do not match on type, only match based on the conditions passed on by the client. Now we can replace the default content negotiator, so the service responsible for content negotiator, with our custom one. Now, if I run this, and I ask for text XML, I'm going to get a 406 response, which is not acceptable. And again, semantically, this is really important for the client, because now the client knows that instead of getting a 200 OK response with some data format that he's not expecting, he's going to be issued a response that is part of the HTTP standards. That means that this specific media type is not supported on this resource. And then it helps in long-term maintenance of the clients as well. So again, this is just an example of how you can build an API that really can be flexible for all kinds of clients. And back to the slides. The next point is OData. So this is what we saw at the very beginning as rich querying capabilities. And if you have already worked with something like WCF data services, you are already familiar with OData. If you haven't, then I think it would be very interesting to see OData in action. Because what OData protocol is effectively all about, it is about exposing an endpoint as iQueryable. So you are giving the client almost infinite freedom in terms of querying. And this happens, of course, over HTTP. So in Web API 1, we had support for four major OData keywords, top, skip, order, by, and filter, which are rather self-descriptive. Filter is like where in link. And in Web API 2, we get support for three additional ones, expand, it allows the client to navigate through the relationship on your object. So if you have maybe a player object, a player resource that has a reference to a team resource, then the client can, using expand, navigate from one resource to the related resource. And again, this makes your API only that much more flexible because it's much easier for the client to discover the relationships. Select is very valuable as well because it allows the client to do partial get. So if your resource has maybe 10 properties and the client is only interested in two of them, he can explicitly specify them in the select and just ask for them. So let's add OData to our API that we've been building all along. And to do that, we have to install additional package. It's not part of Web API Core, but I've already installed it. It's this package, Microsoft ASP.NET Web API OData. Now, to enable an endpoint as OData endpoint in Web API, it's extremely simple. All you have to do is decorate your action. This keyboard keeps switching to German. Okay. Now I'm back at US. We just decorate the action with the queryable attribute. And in fact, we can also decorate this action with a queryable attribute. Now you might think that I'm stupid because this is a single object, so there's nothing to query. But as you will see, that there is plenty to query, actually. So now I cannot request XML, of course, because we still have only one formatter, so I'm going to change it to application JSON. There we go, these are all of our teams. What I can do, I have all the examples ready, look at me. I'm going to say skip one. Well, it's skipping the first one and I'm getting only the other ones. I can say skip one and top one, then I'm getting only one result, which is the second result. I can also apply filtering here, so I can say give me the teams where the league is NBA, and we are getting the Toronto Raptors. And I can say, I want the teams from NHL, and we are getting the Leafs and the Habs. And of course, you can mix and match this. So I can say teams from NHL, but only top one, and that works as well. So as you can see, I haven't done anything on the server side to enable any of this functionality. This is all facilitated by the framework for us. Now, the interesting thing is, if we get the individual team by ID, we get this object. Now, we can say, I want only a name. Well, then we get the name. That's why we apply the queryable attribute to the action get by ID. And in fact, this select works well against all of the teams as well. So you can see this. I want all of the teams, but only the names. Well, we get the list of just the names. So again, with very little work, you are able to build a very flexible API that all of the clients can consume in exactly the way they are interested to consume. So, next point. It's called extras. It's a stupid name, but I couldn't think of anything better. You might want to document your API, and if you want to, there is a NuGet package called Web API Help Page. What it does, it uses this internal service called IAPI Explorer. It reflects over all of your controllers, and it generates a really useful help page that lists all of your controllers, all of the actions, all of the routes. It even creates sample requests, sample response formats, and so on. So it's extremely useful, especially if you are working in a large development team. If you want logging, there is an iTrace writer interface that you can implement that allows you to not only do custom logging, like if you want to log your own messages, but also tap into the internal Web API logging and tracing. So you can see exactly how the whole pipeline executes, what is called after what, and so on. And this is absolutely crucial in debugging and solving a lot of the problems. Of course, the whole framework is open source as well, so you can just build it from the source and step through if you want or do something similar. Then I just wanted to highlight that you should be using Web API Contrib if you work with Web API, because there is a ton of stuff there that will make your life so much easier. So there are all kinds of formatters already there. We just mentioned the iTrace writer interface. Well, Web API Contrib has already implementations for all the major logging providers like Nlog or Log4Net or Elmach or whatever. So all kinds of new functionalities and plugins that will save you a ton of headache are available in the Web API Contrib family. And you know, we just said that the Web API 2 is only 1 month old, but if you are interested to see what's really coming up next, and you are not the kind of person that likes to build from the source, you can try out nightly builds. The ASP.NET team is publishing nightly builds at MyGet, at ASP.NET Webstack nightly, so you can install them and you can add them to your application and see what's coming up next. And I think that is everything, because the next slide is the Microsoft slide, which means we have reached the end of this presentation. I really enjoyed talking to you, and I hope you at least a little bit enjoyed it as well. And have a nice rest of the day. Thank you.